Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. It being 11 o'clock, welcome to the Audit Committee. We've quite a short agenda today. I'm conscious the last one there were 332 pages. This time it's 72. And this is, I think, to do with a number of papers not being complete, which means we'll probably have a rather long day in September, particularly as we've got the training event scheduled with Grant Thornton for the beginning of that day. Be that as it may, we have the matters before us. Apologies from Councillor Pally. Any changes to the order of business? Any matters to be discussed not on the agenda? Any declarations of interest? Could we... Elaine?
Can I just say that the training on the 20th of September, it's been requested that it's held in the afternoon, not in the morning before the Audit Committee. So I just need to check with Grant Thornton if they can make that date and let you know. I was hoping they'd be here today to chat with them, but I can't see them. So I'll get back to you on that.
Thanks for that. So we can all have our diaries in order well in advance.
It's the 20th of September. So it's the day of the next Audit Committee meeting, and we were planning to have the training before the meeting. But we've had a note back from Kyle saying that it would suit the members better to have it in the afternoon. So just need to check to make sure that's suitable with everyone.
Thank you. Before we go into the minutes, Chairman does do various things outside these committees. I've had an exchange with Gary regarding VAT, which was a subject at the last meeting, and received all the assurances that, as far as we can reasonably see, there is no systemic problem about the council's position with value-added tax. Newbards Village, I'm having a meeting with Evelyn McHugh on the 7th of July to discuss what an appropriate reporting framework will be. As you know, this has been a long-standing negative variance for the council, and the purpose of my discussions is to see at what stage and in what shape we could have a reporting framework for the activities at Newbards Village that could reassure this committee and indeed the councillors that we are back on track in some meaningful way. Can we then move on to the minutes of the previous meeting of the 10th of May? Are we content with the matters within the minutes? Yes, and are there any matters arising not covered elsewhere in the agenda? I take it we're all content, in which case we can move to item 5.1, report of... Start again. Item 5.1, the risk management update for January to March 2016.
Thank you very much, Chair. The risk report presented to the Council strategic risk profile for quarter four 2015-16. This provides an overview of those future risks, opportunities and current issues at that time faced by the Council. The report highlights balancing the budget in future years and corporate change and transition as the highest risk facing the Council in quarter four. And the report also highlights balancing budget in 17-18 and the review of pay and grading as the highest issue facing the Council in quarter four. The opportunities of Shawfair, Borders Rail and the Bush and Penicuik are all presented as high opportunity risks. The report provides commentary on the high risks and the issues, and the quarter four strategic risk profile is presented as Appendix 1. This is the second of the New Look risk profile reports and works intended to progress the rollout of this approach, with the service risk registers making it more straightforward to escalate risks from a service level if they become a corporate issue.
OK, Okay, it's obviously been pleasing for this committee to see the risk registers gradually become more populated. Are there any items in your most recent report which might trigger a special audit review at some future date that we should be considering?
I would leave that point for our internal audit team to make a determination. We'll certainly compile a risk register for the organisation, both at corporate level and at service levels, and we'd look to our colleagues in the professional audit team to make a determination in conjunction with the Council's senior management officers to determine what areas should be audited against. But it will primarily be a risk-based audit approach, as far as I understand.
Yes, that's right. Our audit plan each year is based on risk, and we look at all the risk registers and anything that's coming out of those registers that we feel that we should review, we put that into the mix, and as well, and we include all of our cyclical audits and things, and then based on the resource that we have, we decide for that year which audits we need to look at. But again, it's fluid, so if anything changes throughout the year, we can bring other audits in and drop audits out accordingly. So.
Okay, so we have the appropriate degree of integration between Chris's work and risk and the internal audit function. Councillor Baxter.
Thank you, Chair. I noticed in the table on the first page on 2.1.3 that climate change appears as the third highest risk, and yet it doesn't appear in the list of top issues on the following page. Can I ask why that is?
The reason climate change focuses as a risk, the way we're presenting the risk register, risks are those things that haven't necessarily come to fruition yet, whereas issues are things that the Council is having to contend with right now. Now, while the Council has had some experience in recent years in having to deal with climate change impacts through landslips and so on, the reason that climate change is in there as a future risk is that if flooding and water saturation of ground becomes a greater issue within Midlothian, there could certainly be substantial cost impacts to the organisation responding to the impacts of climate change, and certainly the research suggests that the debate on climate change has been had now and the impacts and effects of climate change are working their way through.
Building on Councillor Baxter's review, do you compare our risk registers with those of other local authorities, and do you therefore adapt ours as a result of seeing what best practice is elsewhere?
In drawing together the current risk register that we've got at the moment at a strategic level, we took information from a piece of research that had been carried out by Zurich Municipal, which had looked at more than over 100 public sector organisations, and we drew from that some of the comparable risk features. The risk here, particularly in relation to climate change, is something that will affect different local authority areas in different ways. Now, while we've experienced some landslips and so on, other local authorities would experience flooding issues more noticeably right at the time of heavy rainfall. So risk registers won't always be directly comparable one local authority to another.
Councillor Muirhead.
I'm struggling a wee bit to understand the numbers on these tables here for the risks. Balancing the budget in future years, likelihood's been, not that it's going to affect the position, or it's at the top anyway, but I would have thought the likelihood of there being issues, significant issues in budgets going forward is undoubtedly the case. Now, I'm questioning why the likelihood isn't a 5 on that, and both in on the first page there, and where you've got it in top issues, which is to do with balancing the budget in 17-18. And I also question why the impact in 17-18 is 5, but the impact in future years is 4. Anything I've been told up to now indicates that we're going to have bigger problems as we progress through the next few years. So I'm kind of struggling to understand that. As I say, it's not going to make any difference in terms of where it sits in the priorities, but just if you could maybe explain the rationale behind that.
Okay, thank you. So the difference there is that just now we've got a bit greater clarity around what the budget position is likely to be based on work that's underway in preparing for the budget for 17-18, the balanced budget in future years, that relates to the risk over the longer term, and there's, I suppose, less certainty over the level of funding and necessarily the impact that there'll be on the council at that time. You're right, it's probably close between a 4 and a 5 impact on the future risk, but there's, I suppose, less certainty over the long-term risk than there is over the short-term issue that the organisation is facing.
Councillor Baxter.
Thank you, Chair. Sorry, I wanted to come back to the issue I raised earlier on. Looking at the climate change document, the risk documented on page 24 of the agenda, it looks as if it's our fulfilment of the Climate Change Act. Now, I'm not familiar with the detail of the Climate Change Act, and it could include our reaction and adaption to climate change rather than the reputational risk, if you like, of not planning to reduce our emissions. One thing that does concern me is that the Council's Corporate Climate Change and Sustainability Development Action Plan for 2016-17, the current financial year, as I understand it, has still not gone to Cabinet. Now, that, I would imagine, should have happened in the previous financial year, ahead of the start of that. So I'm just worried that, because looking at the documentation of the risk here, we're talking about reputational damage rather than the risk to reputational damage to the council, rather than the risk of being impacted by floodings, for example. Now, that's my understanding of the risk that's documented here, and I wonder if you can maybe clarify that.
So obviously this committee is mainly concerned about the financial impacts of these risks, and it may be that your point is best determined in another part of the council, but Chris, could you respond on that?
The only thing I can add at this moment, and it may be that I need to take further information back to a future audit committee, is that my understanding is the current reporting on climate change was a voluntary arrangement up until the end of November 2016. So that formalised process will take place as of November this year. So that may account for part of the delay in making that formal report internally.
Chris, thank you for that. We move now to item 5.2, the annual report from the chairman. Very much follows the format of the previous 2 years. It's rather a group document, and the chairman had written quite a lot more than this, and it was edited down by the officers. But I'm very happy for it to be debated in any way you want to have. Well, and curiously, one of the things I said was the council's credit standing is one of the best in Scotland, and you might like to bear in mind that whereas it costs 3.46% for Midlothian to borrow, the mighty city of Edinburgh has to pay 5.11%. So he must be doing something right. Are there any comments and thoughts on this document, which then goes to the council? Councillor De Vink.
Yeah. Was the annual report all written by yourself?
I cover the captions of the materials that issues we deal with month by month or 2 months by 2 months, as we are now. The framework and regulatory materials generally supplied by the internal audit function, and Gary has an opportunity as the finance officer to comment as well.
Could I raise on page 45 of your report, which really is a follow-up, but really an appendix, item 15, has the membership of the committee been assessed against the core knowledge and skills framework and found to be satisfactory? Then it says, partly, members are provided with standard induction, training, and manuals that cover a number of... Anyway, you can read that for yourself. Now, my point is that clearly, to be a member of the audit committee, you need to be financially pretty literate. If you're not, you ought not to be a member of the audit committee. Would you agree?
Well, there is a Audit Committee knowledge and skills framework that we have to bear in mind. You yourself are, I think, the only one who's completed the self-assessment form. My intention is that in September at the training meeting that we capture all these various tests for Audit Committee knowledge and skill. The actual choice, correct me if I'm wrong, Chief Executive, the actual choice of who sits on this committee is a matter not for this committee, but a matter for the Council and for the Cabinet.
I'd only say I think it's important to have a range of skills around the table. I think knowledge of council budgets, knowledge of council functions and knowledge of governance are all important things. And I think that whilst it's not a matter for the committee to determine who's on it, I think there's a range of skills that serve people well in their participation on this committee.
My point is that I want to see on this committee people that are financially literate. If you're financially dyslexic, it's not good to be on this committee. I find it very disappointing that I was the only one to fill in that form that was requested by all of us to be filled in. And I think the chair should insist that we all fill in that form that asks exactly to us what we understood and what we didn't understand. And there were quite a few things I didn't understand, and I consider myself financially literate.
Yes, and this is part of the agenda for September, which gives us all time to return to the Audit Committee knowledge framework and to look at that questionnaire again. But I will expect to incorporate that in the proceedings in September.
It doesn't take away that we as a committee ought to all have skills that are sufficiently competent to understand what is happening. Because if we don't understand what's happening, then we should not be on this committee.
The matter of the composition of this committee is for the Council.
I'll then raise it to Council.
Are there any other thoughts on the Chairman's report? Can we then move to item 5.3, the follow-up report, page 57. Elaine.
Each year, the internal audit plan includes a budget for the follow-up of a sample of audit recommendations to determine whether they have been completed satisfactorily and to give assurance over the ongoing improvement of internal control. A sample of 40 recommendations was reviewed and evidence obtained to support the completion of each recommendation. This revealed that 26 recommendations had been completed satisfactorily, 13 were partially complete and one was found to be unsatisfactory, as detailed in Appendix 1 of the report. The recommendation that was found to be unsatisfactory related to the construction industry scheme and the requirement to deliver annual training to managers. We have therefore raised a further 14 recommendations to address the recommendations that have not been fully completed, and these, together with revised completion dates, are shown in Appendix 2. And the Audit Committee is invited to review the contents of the report and endorse the agreed audit recommendations.
Okay, just quickly to turn to the naughty step issue, we reviewed on 29 September 2015 the construction industry scheme, and the problem the Council had is HMRC had done a review of our practices and determined that in a small number of instances the split of labour and materials in activity that was deemed to be construction activity had not been properly categorised, which would probably lead to an underpayment of tax. And although there was an improvement in our invoicing activity reported even at that date, it was resolved that we would have training for those engaged in the attribution of labour and materials within construction activity such that the Council was paying the correct rate of tax. And my understanding is our problem is that this training hasn't actually happened. Is that a fair reading of the situation?
Initially, there was training carried out in 2014, But when we did the review, we thought that it would be better if this training was refreshed regularly, preferably annually. But there was initial training for all management signing invoices.
Yes, my understanding though is this scheme had changed somewhat, and the issue was the training after the problem was discovered, not the training before. Am I correct in getting those timings right?
There was a programme of training after the fine was imposed upon us, and part of the set-aside of the fine was that we would regularly... Internal
yes,
audit would look
we
at
would continue
system.
To train, and we haven't continued to
we
train.
Haven't
That's
done
the nub of it.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks, Heather. Gary.
Chair, just for the record, Heather mentioned fine. If my understanding is right, the assessment that HMRC applied was continued. It wasn't applied because of the actions that we'd taken, so we haven't actually suffered a financial penalty, to the best of my knowledge.
That's correct, but my impression is that we undertook that we would have continuous training, and whether or not those involved feel it's necessary or not, having made that declaration to HMRC, I think we need to carry it through. Isn't that the guts of the matter?
I think it's important with all these things that we make sure the officers have got the competent training to do what they need to do. And balance that against all the other priorities. But yeah, we've undertaken to do it. It's a bit of an own goal if we don't follow that through.
Yep. So are we now clear that this training will happen on an ongoing basis, such that if HMRC come and inspect us again, we can show them a training file confirming that we continue to achieve full accuracy in this accounting matter? Are we content that these training actions are happening? Heather.
We've made the recommendation that training is conducted annually. Since we did the follow-up, certain information has been passed out to managers, but that was just since we conducted the follow-up.
You've marked this as unsatisfactory. We need to close off at some stage. It seems to me pretty straightforward that this training can happen and will happen. And, John Blair, is it actually happening?
This issue is raised regularly at the management meetings held by the two heads of service who are predominantly involved in the construction team, the head of commercial operations and the head of property and facility services. We did discuss it at our management team in the last few weeks, and I will ensure that the audit recommendations are followed through.
Okay, does that close the matter off to the satisfaction of internal audit?
We'll be raising another recommendation which will go on covalent, and it's got a revised completion date, so again it could be sampled in the future to see if it has been completed satisfactorily. And if the audit committee wanted us to specifically look at that, then that's something we could do and report back on.
I think I'm satisfied if it's part of a general sweep-up of a number of recommendations and it's simply a single caption in a future document of a wider scope. Councillor Milligan?
Yeah, I'm not sure whether you're actually getting the answers, Chair, that you're looking for there. I mean, if we've given assurance that this training will be undertaken by these managers signing off invoices, why are we still sitting here saying that we're going to do that? Why hasn't it been done? If there are people signing stuff that haven't had the proper training to do it, that could levy us open to fines, are they still signing invoices? Because, quite frankly, they shouldn't be. So we should be looking for a more hard and fast. We've given a commitment to carrying out that training. Then that's what should be getting done. And anybody not carrying it out, just like anybody else, if you're required to have something to do a job, if you've not got that training or qualification, you can't do that job. But we should be looking for something hard and fast to see a training programme has been put in place and all officers that are required to undertake it to carry out their duties have done so.
I took John Blair's response to be a hard and fast response. Is that correct, John? This will definitely happen. Right away.
Chairman.
Councillor Devine.
Never mind the officers. What about the members of the Audit Committee and their training?
See you in September. And we have had training days before. Okay, it's internal audit. Happy to pass on to the next item. Are there any further comments to be made? We move on to Councillor Bride.
Another matter on 5.3, if I may. Page 62, item 9, about garages. There seems to be some problem in recording how many we have and probably where they are. A bit disappointing to hear or to see that it's not yet complete. Could somebody tell me, do we know how many garages we have and are we collecting rents on them?
Excuse me, Chair, I can take that question. Certainly I can reassure Councillor Bryan and the committee that the work to determine all our garage sites and our have been completed as of yesterday, and yes, we are collecting the rents, and the that information will allow us to inform the review, which is a further recommendation in terms of either letting the remaining vacant sites or alternative uses for those, such as prospective allotments or new build sites for council housing.
Thanks for that.
Can we then move on to 5.4, the follow-up on controls relating to developer contributions, which we considered quite recently, and I'd like to hear if we've managed to close off. We have a new appointment, I believe, in this month or next, of a member of staff specifically to make sure that we handle developer contributions correctly. Heather?
This report provides a progress update on the implementation of the monitoring of contributions recommendations made in the developer contributions report presented to the Audit Committee in March 2016. Testing was not undertaken during the follow-up, as many of the recommendations hadn't reached their expected completion date. However, discussions with management revealed that planning have completed their service review and are currently implementing the outcomes of the review, recruiting an officer and purchasing a system for monitoring. Finance and planning are reviewing all contributions received and allocated to infrastructure. This work is still in progress and will give assurance once complete. Internal business processes have improved, with the three services involved working together and sharing information. Invoicing is now on a proactive basis, and costings for new infrastructure are prepared in consultation with finance. It's our opinion that management are addressing the risks identified in the original audit, and that the actions completed or underway will, once fully implemented, reduce risk to an acceptable level. The Audit Committee is invited to note the contents of the report.
As I recall this debate, one of the things that kind of staggered this committee was that in a world where electronic diarisation is ubiquitous, for some reason we were depending on individual officers remembering that there was a deal with XYZ developer and that a payment was due in a given period, or alternatively, and actually more dangerously, if the council did not complete some related public work, then there was a right of reclaim by the developer. Have we actually now got electronic systems that make it fail-safe even if a particular individual is not in place or moves on?
That's the intention of the new system that's being procured, although at the moment the services involved are carrying out work to ensure that they have full information about all the areas you've mentioned. It's a matter of recording. The information is recorded somewhere. It's a matter of bringing it together.
Well, that was the whole problem in the first place, that it wasn't integrated and it depended on initiation of action by officers rather than a red flash on the screen saying you must invoice this week the following payment. How long is it going to take before the electronic system is imported up and running?
Oh, they are looking at systems. Hopefully these will be in place within the year. However, they have, with the working that they're doing, the analysis work that finance and planning are doing together, they are trying to get a good basis of information so that they have this information even before the database is in place.
I understand that we don't think we've lost any money on this, but I wonder if the committee's feeling is that we should have a further report back on this once the systems are fully up and running and the new member of staff is recruited and in position. Councillor Milligan.
Yeah, I think a follow-up report would be useful. I think I would also like to get some assurance, because we're hearing here that the information on developer contribution is recorded and kept somewhere. Is there any risk that was kept in the Hopefield School site that burnt down, which I'm told had a lot of planning documents and legal documents in it? So is there any risk we've actually lost that information? A lot of developer contribution that would have been agreed through Section 75 or before that, I think Section 50 agreements, would have been through, I think, the 1999 local development plan, the 2008 local development plan, and other development plans that stalled when the markets froze in 2007. So a lot of officers who agreed them that has the knowledge of that will have moved on, who might still be available to this council to bring back to allow for them to ask whether they have that knowledge. But I think we really need a further report back to sort of say, well, here over the last period of time, whether it be 15 years or whatever, here was the developer contribution required, and it's since been collected by the council or is still outstanding, because I'm aware some of the sites are still sitting dormant and maybe even some unlikely to come forward. But I think we certainly could deal with that wee bit more information.
Yeah, we're dealing with the problem of almost unknown unknowns. We don't even know we have some of these agreements. And Heather, you seem to have been trawling around looking at the way in which all this information is being gathered. What was your assessment of the risk, that, as Councillor Milligan says, that there are documents that have been lost or destroyed?
I can't comment on that risk. All I know is every document I looked for myself, I was able to be given a copy of. So I think it may be more that there is a lot of documentation out there, but it needs recorded, analysed and collated. The work in paragraph 3.12 is the work that you're describing there, looking at historic information and ensuring that that's been dealt with correctly.
So it sounds to me as if there are at least enough trails, given that all these developments will have gone through planning permission and there will have been meetings about them, that it's unlikely we would wholly lose sight of a developer agreement, that we would at least know it should have existed or did exist at some point in the past. Councillor Milligan.
Yep. I must admit, when I saw this report, you know, on the agenda, I was quite surprised that it was 3 pages long, because I would have expected to actually see some evidence behind it. And you know, I think we do need an additional report. I'd like to see some of the detail. Given we're talking about quite a long period of time, that, you know, I'm sure that we could see some evidence that shows us exactly where we've been and where we are, where we're going with this thing. I'm also a bit, you know, we're not talking about thousands of contracts, if you like, for developer contributions here. You know, there are a limited number of sites that have been brought forward over the years. And quite frankly, I would have thought even just a spreadsheet, one central spreadsheet, would have been able to monitor this, never mind waiting for a year for a system. And I would have, you know, I would have expected that we wouldn't be at this stage still relying on the memory officers. I would have thought that information as a priority should have been drawn in to one ad hoc system even at this moment in time, pending getting something more substantial, as has been mentioned. So I would like to see a bit more of the background to this, rather than this the report here, which is basically just giving us assurances that everything's going to be okay, but with no evidence to back that up.
Can I just say the reason this report is so short is because most of the recommendations haven't actually reached their expected completion date yet. So this was done really as a kind of snapshot to provide some assurance to the committee as requested to over the actual monitoring side of things. I mean, there's lots of other recommendations that we haven't followed up on. It's just purely the monitoring ones. But because we're trying to follow up on something that hasn't yet been implemented, it's quite difficult to provide much assurance. So it's probably a bit premature to be doing this piece of work, and a much more in-depth piece of work could be done in the future to provide assurance over the new controls that are going to be implemented.
Councillor, your head.
That's from the audit's perspective, but I would have thought that there'd been a lot of work getting done within the planning department. The department's responsible for actually conducting this work that could have been provided to us to give us some assurance of what, you know, some more detail in terms of what they're doing to correct the situation.
At the last audit committee, I reacted rather than responded, as my colleague told me, because it did seem to fall to one person. And what I was trying to put out was that actually it's planning, it's legal, and it's our finance department working together. So it shouldn't fall under one person. But the report seemed to, in my view, seemed to direct it in that way. Since, and I know that, Councillor, you were concerned that we had lost out on funding, I draw your attention to 3.3. All developer contributions identified as being due for payment so far have either been collected or are in the process of being collected. So we have an officer just now who's pulling all of that information together, but still it goes across three areas, not one area, and we're trying, you know, that... you're right, you know, a simple spreadsheet would be fine at the moment, but we want something much more robust than that, that's actually a system that you feed in the information from the planning department that's followed through by legal and finance. So it's not relying on one person doing it, but by having the compliance officer in post, that will also help move things along at a much quicker pace. In relation to Hopefield, all of the documents that went into Hopefield were all documented, so we know what's missing. You know, if the documents did go on fire, we actually know what's missing. So again, that can be followed up. So I think this document was to provide a reassurance that we weren't losing out on lots of funding, but a further report will come forward once we've got all the systems in place.
Yeah, I think that's really the mood of the committee, that at that point we'll want to see something much more granular about the various positions the council holds. And perhaps consideration of the question raised by Councillor Milligan, is there a risk that any developer deal has completely disappeared due to lapse of time, fire or any other cause? And I suspect there will be so many leads in terms of the planning aspect that must be a low risk, but it would be nice to see someone contemplate that and test that proposition. Are we happy to conclude this? Thank you. And that, I think, is the end of the
sorry.
Meeting. Councillor Devic.
I heard somehow that there is a plan that may be forced upon us, but that we are changing auditors. And I would really welcome, as the audit committee, to be aware if there is such a monumental change pending. Because if in business life a company changes its auditors, it immediately starts all kind of flags flying and messages coming up on the screen saying that something is wrong. Could we hear exactly what the plan is? Because it concerns us all.
Thank you. You should really have raised this in the order of business at the beginning of the meeting. Is it the will of the committee to discuss this matter? It's not on the agenda.
The fact it's not on the agenda, I have got no information on this issue at all. It should have been raised with you before the meeting, never mind at the order of business at the beginning of the meeting. If there are concerns about that, then someone should have came to you or one of the officers responsible for this and got it put on the agenda.
In all fairness, I did raise it with the chair, but I have been amiss not to have put it during the meeting. But I raised it prior to the meeting.
Gary, do you want to comment?
Thanks, Chair. As members will be aware, the appointment of auditors for local government is governed by the Accounts Commission, and the appointment of auditors is for a five-year tenure. This is the last year that Grant Thornton will be our auditors. My memory serves me right, we've been advised of the outcome of the retendering process and told which private firms will provide audit services across the public sector. And we've been initially informed of the appointment that is likely to be made for Midlothian Council. I just can't, it'd be remiss of me to say that that's been absolutely confirmed. I would have to go back and check the correspondence. But there will be a change from Grant Thornton to one of the other private sector bodies at the end of Grant Thornton's five-year tenure. And that's normal practice. That's what would happen with the way that the audit services are provided for local government and the appointments are made. But I can check. I just can't remember off the top of my head and don't have access to the papers here just who will come in and whether that's been absolutely confirmed at this point.
But Chairman, could we? Is it not possible if somebody has done a good job over 5 years, rather like the election, that they could be reappointed? Why should they not be reappointed? When you start with a new auditor, the auditor has to take a long time to get used to all the things that are particular of the clients, and I feel that if Grant Thornton, who has, in my eyes, done a very good job, it should be given a chance to have a second five-year period.
Well, as Chairman, I'm not unsympathetic to what you're saying, but I don't actually think it is a matter for the Audit Committee as things currently stand. It's determined, as Gary said, by the Accounts Commission, and there may well be proper representations as to the lack of involvement of councillors and this committee in the question of the auditor, but those are almost pan-Scotland issues because all local authorities are subject to the same regime. So I'd encourage you to take up your point with the officers and with the council, and if it's the will as a group that we make representations about the current regime, then that's up to you. But I don't think it is strictly a matter as things stand for this committee.
It may be not a matter for this committee, but if I recall, we are, all the elected representatives, are really the democratic voice of the Midlothian people. And we are serving here as the representatives of them. And if you look at the company, the shareholders appoint the auditors, i.e. the voters, our customers, they should be appointing the auditors. And I really feel it's very wrong if it is a body that is not involved with us, that is really away from us, that they should be appointing our auditors.
That may be so, but also in the private sector, a subcommittee of the board does not get involved in the appointment of the auditors, in my experience. It is a matter for the council as a whole, if you are unhappy with the arrangements that the Scottish Government has put in place. Councillor Muirhead.
We are talking about external auditors whose job it isn't just to audit the activities of the council in terms of officers. There have been criticisms for external auditors about elected members' involvement in things as well. So it surely can't be right that we are influencing the appointment of external auditors. I can understand why it would want to be done out with the council, and I can also understand why you would, and no casting any aspersions on any of the auditors that we've had, But I can understand why there would be a desire to refresh that every 5 years, because you didn't want to get into a situation where it's too cosy, a relationship between auditors and the organisation that they're auditing.
This debate has to take place in another place. Can I thank you all for attending and look forward to seeing you in September.